Dr. George Dimitri, Dana-Farber Cancer Institute.
Over the past 5 years, 51% of all FDA-approved cancer drugs have had substantial input from Dana-Farber scientists and clinical investigators. And that comes from the culture here, the very basic curiosity-driven scientists that are probing really how cancer works.
At Dana-Farber, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Good morning, I'm Taylor Wilson, and this is 5 Things You Need to Know Wednesday, the 15th of February, 2023. Today, what U.S. officials are now saying about the latest unidentified objects they shot down, plus the challenge to get healthy lunches into schools. And a new candidate has entered the Republican presidential field. The three unidentified flying objects shot down from North American airspace might turn out to be balloons used for research or commercial purposes that posed no direct threat to the United States. That's what White House spokesman John Kirby said yesterday. No one has come forward to accept responsibility, and there are still a number of unanswered questions. Making things more complicated, the U.S. has not yet retrieved debris from the objects shot down over Alaska, Canada's Yukon Territory, and in U.S. airspace over Lake Huron, because each is in a remote area. Meanwhile, Kirby said the U.S. has not seen any indication that points directly to the recent objects being part of China's spy program. The U.S. still says the object it shot down about a week before off the South Carolina coast was a Chinese spy balloon. New federal rules proposing healthier food in school lunches are running into challenges from the schools themselves. Many public schools say they just don't have the staff or resources to deal with the changes. I learned more from USA Today education reporter Kayla Jimenez. Kayla, thanks for hopping on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
There are new proposed federal rules pushing for less sugar and less salt in the food that's served at public schools. What are these changes proposing specifically?
Some of those changes include making sure that sugar is only 10% of calories in a week, reducing salt intake. There could be a possibility of reducing flavored milk in younger grades. So there's a variety of changes that they're proposing to make school lunches healthier that they say align with the latest nutrition science.
Kayla, you write in your piece that this actually presents a pretty big challenge for a lot of public schools and school districts around the country. What kinds of challenges are we talking about?
Yeah, I think everyone agrees that we want the nation's kids to be healthier, but the schools are reeling from staffing challenges and even supply shortages. They're saying they can't access even ingredients that don't meet the current standards by the USDA. And a recent School Nutrition Association survey almost estimated about 90% are facing those shortages and staffing issues. So there's this argument that if they're going to be able to make healthier lunches, they're going to need to do more scratch cooking, and they don't have the staff or supplies to do that.
Are there any solutions here to try to get schools on board?
So I did talk to someone from the USDA yesterday, and she had emphasized that it's going to be a rollout. The proposed changes could go to 2029. So they're saying we're giving schools this time. I have heard from schools that they're worried that unless they get more financial investment from the government, it's going to be hard to meet that need.
What do health experts and advocates say about why changes like these are needed?
To keep up with the latest nutrition science is what they've been emphasizing, decreasing obesity rates in kids and getting everyone up to board with the healthiest foods. I talked to Lisa Johnson, who's a director of food service in Washington, and she said she'd love to do that, but sometimes they order apples and they have that on the menu and then they don't come that day.
All right. Kayla Jimenez covers education for USA Today. Kayla, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley has launched her bid for president.
You should know this about me. I don't put up with bullies. And when you kick back, it hurts them more if you're wearing heels. I'm Nikki Haley, and I'm running for president.
The move comes after Haley teased it for weeks. The former UN ambassador used the video on her Twitter feed to outline her biography and to attack President Joe Biden and Democrats. She said nothing about former President Donald Trump, at least not explicitly, but Haley's comment in the video about bullies may have been a message to him. Her declaration makes her the first major Republican candidate to challenge him for the 2024 Republican nomination. Trump and his allies have stressed in recent weeks that she once said she would not seek the presidency if Trump did. Other prominent Republicans are also considering runs at the White House, including Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, former Vice President Mike Pence, and former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. Officials in Ohio said yesterday that toxic chemicals released last week after a train derailment have affected local air and water while entering the Ohio River. But Tiffany Kavalek, chief of the Division of Surface Water at the EPA, said toxicity levels remain low.
The spill did flow to the Ohio River during that initial slug, but the Ohio River is very large, and it's a water body that's able to dilute the pollutants pretty quickly. We're seeing very low levels of contaminants, and so all of the treatment being done at those water systems take out any contamination before it finished water.
No one was injured when about 50 train cars derailed in East Palestine, Ohio on February 3rd. But amid fears of a potential explosion, officials evacuated the area and intentionally released toxic vinyl chloride from the train. There will be a town hall meeting tonight in East Palestine to address lingering questions. Since the incident, several lawsuits are pending against rail operator Norfolk Southern. The company announced this week that it was creating a $1 million charitable fund to help the community. Toys and nostalgia. Whether it's Legos, Barbies, a pet rock, or Barney, many of us associate toys and playing with childhood. And that can bring a wave of memories. Margot Bergman is a senior research scientist and part-time professor at the University of Washington at Tacoma. She says that nostalgia is all in the science.
We still haven't figured it out completely, exactly what mechanism kind of catches the attention. But psychologists, neurologists, neuroscientists have all been kind of working on it. It seems to be some combination of something that is simple enough to capture the attention of whatever age group is interested in it, but has enough depth or something interesting and hooky that it gets the parents interested in buying it.
This idea is especially back at the forefront after it was announced that Barney is coming back with an animated reboot. Margot says Barney in particular highlights this idea of nostalgia.
Barney, like, it caught you on different levels. It caught you on different senses. So there was like the music aspect. There was the visual aspect. It was very simple, but eye-catching with lots of bright colors. You could sing the song. Like, small children love repetition. That's something that psychologically they've shown, is that children love anything that can repeat.
And she said the timing makes sense because kids who once loved Barney have grown up and now have the dollars to spend on that nostalgia.
What's behind all reboots is a sense of nostalgia. You know, as they said, the search for more money. I think it's always like kind of whoever, somebody has thought, you know, this was something I remembered in my childhood that was really good. Maybe that they're looking at the programs that are out there today and they're seeing that they're too complicated, or that they're seeing a need for something that's that level. There's nothing in that for that age group that's just right. And so they're looking for that reminiscence of what they had. The people that were the target age group for Barney are getting into the decision-making groups. You know, they're the ones that are their 30s and 40s now, and they're the ones in making out there making the decisions. Like, hey, I liked this. Why wouldn't we want to try to make this happen again?
Thanks to USA Today video producer Patrick Colson Price. And thanks for listening to Five Things. You can find us every morning right here, wherever you're listening right now. I'm back tomorrow with more of Five Things from USA Today.
Dr. George Dimitri, medical oncologist, Dana-Farber Cancer Institute.
Over the past 5 years, 51% of all FDA-approved cancer drugs have had substantial input from Dana-Farber scientists and clinical investigators. And that comes from the culture here, the very basic curiosity-driven scientists that are probing really how cancer works, and then the expert clinicians that interact with patients and families every day. It's not easy to have input at a substantive level to new drugs that are safe and effective at treating cancer. So our whole mantra has always been to try to minimize risks to patients and yet try to maximize the opportunity of finding how effective a new treatment could be. And that means understanding cancer really, really deeply.
At Dana-Farber, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.